And number 25 is out over the plate and lined to left field for a base hit. Merrifield scores, and Salvi's 1,000th hit is an RBI.
Salvador Perez's 1,000th hit last night went 4-for-4, but the Royals lose 10-3 to the Angels last night at Kauffman Stadium. And so the boys in blue are now on the season. Their record stands at 4-4. The Angels improved to 7-3. Tight game until the seventh inning when the Angels played at 3. Three more insurance runs in the ninth to get the W. Brady Singer takes a loss. 4 runs. We just 1 earned. Royals had 3 errors. 5 innings pitched for Singer. 7 hits allowed. And Scott Barlow gave up 3 runs. And Carlos Hernandez came in and walked all 3 batters he faced. Jake Newberry, who was called up because Jesse Hahn went to the injured list, didn't fare very well either. 1 2/3, 4 hits, and 3 earned runs. As the Royals offensively, the highlight was Salvador Perez. 4 of the Royals' 7 hits in the ballgame. And Jorge Soler struck out 3 times at 4 at-bats, but did drive in 2 with a base hit as the Royals fall to the Angels by a final of 10-3. Royals are back in action coming up tonight as they'll take on Angels in Game 2. Danny Duffy on the hill. Perfect outing. Not perfect, but he was scoreless. 6 innings, scoreless ball. So his ERA is 0 going into the matchup tonight at 7:10 at Kauffman Stadium. If you're wondering about baseball and who's off to a good start and who is not off to a good start, I can tell you that the Red Sox lead the American League East with a 6-3 record. Yankees and Tampa Bay at 5-5. Cleveland, Minnesota 5-4. The White Sox 5-5. The Royals are 4-4, but a half game out of first. Angels 7-3. Houston is 6-4. Seattle's 5-4 in the AL West. NL East, the Phillies have a lead at 6-3. Cincinnati leads the Central 7-3. The Brewers are 6-4, and the Dodgers have the best record in baseball, the defending World Series champions. They are 8-2. The Padres right behind them with the second best record at 8-3, and San Francisco off to a decent start at 6-4. Local sports information, we pass it off to Dusty.
Yeah, a lot of activities coming up here today. The Blewett Trojan baseball and softball teams are both in action, and you can find those games and watch them online at ncksports.com with the Blewett Trojan channel. Doubleheader action starts at 4 o'clock for both the Blewett softball and baseball teams here this afternoon hosting Clay Center. So if you're interested in watching, again, ncksports.com. Other softball today, Sylvan Lucas Lincoln is at Wichita Trinity, 3 o'clock this afternoon, and the Sylvan Lucas baseball team is at Bennington at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and Wamego is at Concordia in both baseball and softball. And those doubleheaders will start at 4:30 this afternoon. In track and field action, the Smith Center Redmond Relays starting at 3 o'clock this afternoon, along with the host school Smith Center, are Beloit, St. John's, Tipton, Thunder Ridge, and Pike Valley. Also at 3 o'clock this afternoon, the Stockton Invitational, Lakeside and Osborne from the area competing there. And the Sylvan Lucas track and field teams at the Ellsworth Invitational starting at 3:30 here today. And then in boys golf, 3 different events that area teams will be competing at. The Osborne Invitational starts at 1 o'clock. Osborne, Lakeside, and Smith Center from the area are there. Sylvan Lucas golf team is at the La Crosse Invitational at 1 o'clock this afternoon as well. And then Beloit will be at the Minneapolis Invitational at 3 o'clock this afternoon. So, again, a very busy day for high school sports here in the area. And as always, you can find all the spring sports schedules at ncksports.com. So best of luck to all the area athletes here today.
All right, today's National Scrabble Day. Did you play Scrabble when you were growing up?
I did not very much. I wasn't very good at it, so it was kind of, I didn't like them games that I had to use my brain a whole lot, you know?
Oh, okay. All right.
I like the ones where it was clear. You just went around a board.
Yeah,
and,
sorry. And, Parcheesi, yeah. Monopoly, things like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Monopoly took too long, so I didn't play
a
lot.
Monopoly takes way too long.
But yeah, I just wanted something that was simple when I was doing a board game.
I understand that. Let's give your brain a break and let something else tell you what to do. Hey, I drew 10. Go 10. Okay, I think I can do that if I can count to 10. Perfect. Here's Mike Matheny, manager of the Royals, on Brady Singer's start last night.
Not the results, but the stuff was as good as we've seen from him. Thought he commanded the lower part of the zone maybe as good as we've seen in a long time. And you're talking 3 unearned runs that ended up piling on. There was some trouble, but his stuff was very encouraging today and something to build on in my mind.
Yeah, the defense let the Royals down quite a bit there last night. Singer had one of those errors as well, as the Royals do lose last night 10-3. All right, some other news that we want to get to. It is now official. Britt Reed, Andy Reid's son, has been charged in that accident. Took place a few days before the Super Bowl, and the family of Ariel Young, the 5-year-old who was hospitalized with brain injuries after a car crash in February involving Britt Reed, isn't happy with the charges that were brought Monday against the former Kansas City Chiefs assistant coach. Prosecutors announced that Reed was charged with a felony count of driving while intoxicated for his involvement in the February 4th crash. He is facing up to 7 years in prison if convicted. Young's cousin told USA Today, "We don't believe the charges are fair or harsh enough. It's been incredibly hard knowing he's out every day living his normal life, and Ariel's life has completely changed. Our whole family's life changed due to him making the decision to drink and drive." Reed struck two stationary cars on the side of an interstate shortly after 9 p.m. on February 4th, just days before the Chiefs were to compete in Super Bowl 55. Investigators said that Reed, the team's outside linebackers coach and son of head coach Andy Reed, was driving nearly 84 miles per hour seconds before the crash in a 65-mile-an-hour zone. Reed reportedly impacted the first car, then steered into the second car while driving nearly 68 miles per hour. Reed told police that night that he had just left work. Prosecutors alleged Monday that he was drinking alcohol before the crash and he acted with criminal negligence by driving at an excessive rate of speed, failing to be aware of a disabled vehicle, striking it, and causing physical injury to a child in that vehicle. They said he admitted to having 2 to 3 drinks that night, and medical records revealed he had a blood alcohol concentration of 0.113 nearly 2 hours after the crash, legal limit 0.08. Reed, who turns 36 this month, was placed on leave and then did not get his contract renewed with the team. Young was hospitalized with life-threatening injuries and suffered severe traumatic brain injury and other injuries as well. She was in a coma for over a week, released from the hospital on April the 2nd. Young's family attorney said Monday that the DWI charge Reed is facing is absolutely appropriate under the circumstances. Her recovery is far from over. She still can't walk or talk and is being fed through a feeding tube. The Chiefs of Court send out the, you know, bland statement. We're concerned about the family, so forth and so on. No need for me to read it word for word. You can check it out online as well. But obviously, the family not having, I mean, the most he would get is 7 years in prison with this charge, Britt Reed. And this is why you don't drink and drive. I mean, you don't drink and drive. And, you know, we have a, what was it? I forgot his official title, but was it majority leader in the Kansas House or something? I don't have it in front of me, but Gene Solentrop.
Yeah.
Gene Solentrop drove one wrong way down Interstate 70 drunk as a skunk. His blood alcohol was even higher, and it was than Britt Reed's, and he was driving had double the legal amount of alcohol in his system. And then he called Officer Donut Boy disrespectful and so forth and so on. I'm not getting politics. I don't even care if he's Republican or Democrat. We know what happened when somebody goes down the interstate the wrong way, killing friends of ours' daughter here at the radio station. And that was a older person that just probably wasn't aware of where he was at night. Whereas in this case, this person, elected official, got drunk, disrespectful on top of everything else towards officers, but also the fact he drove the wrong way down an interstate. It's lucky he didn't kill anybody, because that's happened before. And Britt Reed is fortunate that nobody has died from this accident. However, he has messed up the life of a 5-year-old because he decided to get behind the wheel while he had drank too much. And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, if you drink too much, and I drink from time to time, certainly. I have a few beers here and there. I like my whiskey drink. But you need to have somebody else drive, all right, if you know you're not in any condition to drive. In some cases, you feel like you are and you're not. You need to be aware of how many drinks you had. And if you need to call somebody, whether it's a friend, whether it's a relative, whether it's a neighbor, whether it's your own kids, for crying out loud, I think it's embarrassing. But if your kids got to drive you home, your kids got to drive you home to save other people's lives because you got drunk as a skunk. Or I've said this before, if you call law enforcement, they'll actually give you a ride. They ain't gonna arrest you because you got drunk. That's not illegal to get a drunk. Mm-hmm. It's illegal to be drinking and driving. That's the thing. So this is an example, and we see this. And every day there are drunk driving accidents every single day in this country. And honestly, I believe that the laws are not stringent enough against those that drive drunk. I can tell you that I know of somebody that got 2 DWIs in 3 days and lost his license for 1 year. That was it.
Yeah.
Lost his license for 1 year. And he got lucky because his 2 DUIs or DWIs were in 2 different counties in the state of Kansas. And this was years ago. I don't know if that's been fixed or a loophole that was. I don't know. But that's embarrassing. That's ridiculous. I have a good friend that got arrested for a DUI, and he lost his license in Kansas City for I don't know how long it was. He had to blow into a breathalyzer or whatever before he could start his car and drive once he got his license back, which that's good. Now, that's at least he's learned from that. I know he has. But some people haven't learned from that or don't learn from that. And I do believe that people are, you know, make mistakes, but some mistakes you make are a lot different. You know, you make a mistake in regards to, you know, forgetting to lock the front door of your house, that hopefully doesn't come back to hurt you. You know, if you make a mistake in your job and put the wrong ad in for the wrong client, that's not a deadly mistake. It's a mistake, but it's not a deadly one. It's not going to get you fired either. You can make a mistake to get you fired, but it's not a deadly mistake to where it obviously hurts somebody. Obviously, drinking and driving can kill people. And people don't really fully understand. The vehicle you drive is a weapon. It can be used as a weapon. Mm-hmm. If you want to go out and run into somebody, you can. I mean, you can. There's nothing that's going to stop you. Now, you got to deal with the consequences of it.
Conscience is going to stop you,
yes.
But nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you hope so.
If that's what you're doing and planning, nothing is going to stop you.
But a vehicle is a deadly weapon. It really is. And it's especially deadly when somebody gets behind the wheel intoxicated. And Britt Reid did that just a few days before the Super Bowl. Made a horrible decision. Not only did it hurt his team. No question, it distracted the Chiefs. I think it had an effect on this team going to Super Bowl 55. But that's not even the biggest thing we need to worry about. It's the health and well-being of this 5-year-old girl whose life has been changed, and all she was doing is sitting in the backseat of a car.
Yeah.
So Britt Reid, I would hope he feels horrible and just absolutely beside himself. He should. If he doesn't, then he has bigger problems than we even realize. And I do hope just because of his name, he doesn't get off with a slap on the wrist. Because I don't care if Britt Reid's... Listen, this is Andy Reid, I'd say the same thing.
Absolutely.
All right? I'll tell you what, if this is Patrick Mahomes, I'd say the same thing. Now, a lot of other people would cut complete different rules for Patrick Mahomes. Even fans would.
Mm-hmm.
They would. Like, if this is Andy Reid, it would be different. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Britt Reid is a position coach, or was. He's not the head coach. He doesn't take the team to the Super Bowl back-to-back years and turn around the franchise. You know, he's not the quarterback of the football team. You know, he's not Tyrann Mathieu or Chris Jones or Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce. It would be treated differently by the fans even. Like, oh, you know, he's a great quarterback. If Mahomes did something like this, well, let's cut him some slack. He's a great quarterback. He's like, no, it shouldn't be any different. Any different if the names Britt Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Aaron Donald, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Dusty Dynas, Wade Gershner. It shouldn't matter. You should get the same charge. But we know there are things in regards to money and representation. We see that all the time. All you got to do is go back and look at the O.J. Simpson trial, for crying out loud. A lot of people that have had less evidence against them that have been convicted of murder that didn't have the money to have a good defense team, and O.J. had plenty of money to have a defense team. So people need to take this seriously. It's okay to have a good time, have some drinks with your friends, but it's called drink responsibly. That's the slogan, and it's absolutely correct. And Britt Reid now is being charged and could face up to 7 years in prison if he's convicted. You know, based on what we know, you would think he would get convicted of this, but we don't know what's going to happen. If there's some kind of plea deal and he gets 2 years, or if he even serves any time in prison. He's fortunate she didn't die, but that family's got to deal with a kid that's got traumatic brain injuries and lucky to be alive, but's got a long way to go to even get back to recovered and may never recover because Britt Reid's negligence.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really add much to that. It's about doing things responsibly, you know, and especially, like, it's easier, like, I would say you're drinking with some friends, right, to drink responsibly and try to, you know, have the right head on. Sounds like Britt Reid was alone and just decided to leave and had that all in his system. And
as far as we know, I've been drinking alone, which, you know, I'm not saying you can't have a drink alone. You can, but if you're drinking a whole bunch too much by yourself, you've got a problem.
Absolutely.
Whether it's, you know, you're depressed, mental health, whatever it may be.
You've got an issue. Somewhere, yeah.
And unfortunately, Britt Reid didn't get enough help to where this could have been avoided.
Yeah.
All right, New England Patriots Julian Edelman retiring due to injuries, failed a physical, basically was cut loose by the Patriots, so the writing was on the wall. The soon-to-be 35-year-old receiver was a seventh-round draft pick. He was a starter on each of the team's three most recent Super Bowl championship teams. He's limited to 6 games in 2020, finished 21 catches for 315 yards. Edelman said in his retirement video, "I've always said I'll go until the wheels come off, and they finally have fallen off." Bill Belichick had some really nice things to say about Julian Edelman, which, you know, that's saying something coming from Bill Belichick. Edelman had an outstanding postseason career, one of the most productive postseason receivers in league history, second all-time with 118 receptions for 1,442 yards. He also had the game-winning score in the win over Seattle, although it wouldn't have been if Seattle would have gave the ball to Marshawn Lynch at the one-yard line. He had 10-catch, 141-yard performance in the Patriots' win over the Rams, which was the last Super Bowl that the Patriots won in Super Bowl 53. His 24 receptions, the Super Bowl player tied with fellow Patriots receiver Deion Branch for fifth all-time. His 337 Super Bowl receiving yards are fourth all-time behind Jerry Rice, Lynn Swann, and Rob Gronkowski. His 10 receptions, Super Bowl 53, tied for the eighth highest single total. Dual threat out of college at Kent State, just 5'10", 198. He threw for 13 touchdowns. He ran for 13 more during his final season at Kent State. His versatility caught the eye of Bill Belichick, who kept Edelman on the roster following a rookie camp, and he blossomed into Tom Brady's number one receiver during their Super Bowl runs in 14, 16, and 18. His contributions to the Patriots' recent success earned him a spot on the franchise's all-decade team for the 2010s. While he was never selected to a Pro Bowl, Edelman has a permanent place in Patriots lore, as he is one of the more important members of the team's recent championship runs. I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but of course, there are Patriot fans that that think that Julian Edelman is a surefire Hall of Famer. The numbers during the regular season do not back that up at all. Tyreek Hill has 17 more touchdown receptions in five seasons in his career than Julian Edelman has for his whole career, which is an interesting nugget. And a Patriot fan came back and says, "Name one great big catch that Tyreek Hill's had in the playoffs." And I don't know. It's a play called Wasp.
Yeah.
That was a kind of a big play that turned the whole Super Bowl 54 around. So apparently that Patriot fan never watched that game.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's how it is. You look through the color glasses. You don't follow another team. You're stuck on your team and your players. And so the question, I think, with Julian Edelman in regards to the argument whether or not he's Hall of Famer is going to be, do you combine postseason with regular season, which it should be. It should all be together.
Oh, sure.
It should be postseason and regular season. And his postseason numbers are definitely Hall of Fame worthy. There's no question about that. His postseason numbers are Hall of Fame worthy, but his regular season numbers don't match up with that. He wasn't a Pro Bowler ever. A very good receiver, but somebody pointed out that Roddy White has just as good a numbers from the Atlanta Falcons. He's not a Hall of Famer in anybody's eyes, but he doesn't have the postseason stuff. You know, some guys make their careers in the postseason. You know, Carlos Beltran is a borderline Hall of Famer, had a pretty good career, and then actually had some really good postseason runs, especially the Astros, and nobody says he's a surefire Hall of Famer. So why is Julian Edelman? Because they're from the East Coast, they're Boston and Foxborough, and you know, they won a whole bunch of Super Bowls to Tom Brady. And Julian Edelman definitely got the most out of his ability, no question about that. Seventh-round draft pick that might be a Hall of Famer. I don't know, man. You know, Curt Schilling has been a borderline Hall of Famer, right? And one of the big arguments that Curt Schilling has always been, and that's a guy from, you know, that was played for the Red Sox and won World Series with the Red Sox. So there's a great example, probably a good comparison, honestly. And the knock on Curt Schilling is he didn't have enough wins in his career. He didn't have enough numbers in his career to be Hall of Fame worthy, according to some. Others would argue that say, listen, he was terrific in postseason play. He was lights out in postseason play. And so he should be in the Hall of Fame. It's a very similar argument, Julian Edelman. When you argue about postseason, well, if you're talking just postseason, then Curt Schilling and Julian Edelman are probably Hall of Famers. But that's not what the Hall of Fame is, isn't the postseason Hall of Fame. It's your career, and that includes your regular season and your postseason. Combine it all together, mix it up in a big pot, and then see how it comes out. And is it Hall of Fame worthy or not? I personally believe that Julian Edelman is a borderline Hall of Famer. I will say that. I understand the argument of how clutch he was and how good he was in the playoffs. It does help when you go to the Super Bowl many times. It helps when your quarterback's Tom Brady. It helps that your coach is Bill Belichick. But at the same time, Joe Montana had Bill Walsh. Joe Montana had Jerry Rice. You know, Jerry Rice had Joe Montana. And we can go on and on about guys that are Hall of Famers that had great guys around them. That's usually what happens, you know. Terry Bradshaw had Lynn Swann. Lynn Swann had Terry Bradshaw. There's Franco Harris. I mean, can use all kinds of examples. Troy Aikman had Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith. So it is interesting argument, and I think the key is, to me, You can look at the numbers. You can shrink the numbers. You can easily, if your agenda is to say that Julian Edelman is a Hall of Famer, I think you can make a decent argument that he might be. I don't think you can say he's a surefire Hall of Famer. I think that's over the top. But I think you could make an argument that he's borderline Hall of Fame material and that he could or should be in, depending on, you know, what argument you want to support. I also can definitely see the argument as well that he didn't do enough in his regular season career to be a Hall of Fame wide receiver. And once again, it goes out. You're not going to change anybody's opinion. I saw Doug Gottlieb say he's a Hall of Famer. I've seen other people say there's no way he's a Hall of Famer. And there's probably some jealousy towards Julian Edelman because he's a Patriot and won all those Super Bowls. There's a little jealousy there, and there's no doubt about it. I've always thought that he was probably just short of being a Hall of Famer. That's how I've always felt with Julian Edelman. I'm not to say that he... Listen, if they decide he's a Hall of Famer, he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, I'm not going to lose sleep at night worrying about Julian Edelman in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But I do believe that you need to be consistent in who you put in the Hall of Fame. If you're going to put Julian Edelman in the Hall of Fame, then you're going to have to put similar players in the Hall
of
Fame.
Jordy Nelson is a first ballot Hall of Famer if Julian Edelman gets into the Hall of Fame.
Based on the regular season numbers, yes.
Based on,
I mean, Jordan Nelson did win a Super Bowl and played well in the Super Bowl, but he didn't have nearly as many playoff appearances. He doesn't have anything close to Julian Edelman when it comes to postseason statistics, but he by far has a better regular season career.
Yeah.
And so then mix them all together, where does he come out? And that is the argument and decision you have to make. What's more important? Some people would argue postseason is more important than regular season, so that should be weighted heavier than the regular season, which I could understand that a little bit. I mean, Reggie Jackson, you know, he's a Hall of Famer no matter what. But Reggie Jackson got a name called Mr. October. You don't remember what, I mean, you forget what he did in the regular season. He was a great player.
Yeah.
But you forget what he did in the regular season. You know why? Because you remembered for what you did in the postseason. That's what makes you a legend. I mean, all you got to do is look at KU basketball. All you got to look at the NCAA tournament. All you got to do is look at Gonzaga. All right, it's not that you went undefeated in regular season. That's great and all. You're going to be remembered if you went perfect or not, and they didn't. And they're not national champions. Gonzaga will always be remembered, had a great team that came up a bit short. They will not be recognized as national champions. Kansas has had many teams that are worthy of winning a championship and got knocked out in the tournament. So we can always go to that argument that, well, you know, that team had a great year. They should be one of the greatest teams of all time. And the comeback is what? Like, for instance, I'll give you a good example. You're a Bulls fan. You're a Bulls fan all that time. Back when Jordan was there, I was too.
Yeah.
Okay, so the knock on the Warriors had the greatest regular season in NBA history. That's a fact. They won 73 games, and the Bulls won 72. And people say the Warriors, in order to be the best team of all time, they have to win the championship. And they were one win away. They're up 3-1 on the Cavs, and they blew it, and they lost. And everybody says the Warriors didn't have the greatest season in NBA history because they came up one win short. But yet they won one more game than the Bulls. So championships matter. The point being is, if the Bulls didn't win a championship, 72-10 wouldn't have been that big a deal. I mean, it was, but it wouldn't have been as big a deal. If the Warriors would have won it all when they went 73-9, then they'd be considered by some, maybe even many, the greatest NBA team of all time. Whether that's fair or not, that's how they'd be judged. They had the best record. They won it all. They finished the whole deal. And so postseason numbers, I mean, Bill Self gets knocked for not winning enough games in the tournament. He has great regular seasons. He has great seedings, 1, 2, 3, 4 seeds all the time. Every year he's been at KU. And the knock is that he only has one championship and 3 Final Fours. But yet he's a great coach. He got a lifetime contract, in essence, from KU. He's one of the best coaches in America. But he hasn't won as many championships as some people think. What about Peyton Manning? Peyton Manning put up great regular season numbers. His postseason numbers, go look at them. They're pedestrian.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Manning's his postseason numbers are, you know, middle of the pack in some cases. He had some good games. He had some bad games. Patriots stood in his way many times. And he's got 2 Super Bowls to show for it, and I really count one because I know he got a second one, but he didn't do much for it with the Broncos. The Broncos defense carried the way, and he got benched that season and then came back. He got benched for Brock Osweiler, for crying out loud, his last time he won a Super Bowl. But the point being is, you're judged. Why is Tom Brady considered greater than Peyton Manning? Because there's not much of an argument anymore. There used to be. You and I talked about it.
Yeah.
I always thought Peyton Manning was the better quarterback myself. But Tom Brady, nobody even argues this anymore. You know why? Because Brady's got all the championships. He's got all the championships compared to Peyton Manning. And that's how he get judged. So the question then would be, for those that are saying who gets in the Hall of Fame, if the postseason counts so much, when we decide, well, Jordan has more championships than LeBron. So if you argue that Jordan is supposed to be the better player than LeBron because he has 6 titles and LeBron has 4, then why don't you put weight onto what Julian Edelman did in the postseason? I think that's a fair argument, because you need to be, I think you should be consistent in your argument. If you're going to sit here and say that six championships touts four championships and that Jordan is better than LeBron, then shouldn't you value in this argument Julian Edelman's postseason numbers and championships that he's won as a wide receiver, and other receivers have great numbers but didn't play on a great team or didn't have the luxury of having a great coach and a great quarterback, which that's, once again, in the eye of the beholder. I think that's a good point. The only thing I would say is LeBron and Michael both are Hall of Famers. So we're talking Hall of Fame. How much weight do you put on postseason? I think it's up to each individual. If you get caught up in the regular season, I think you're going a slippery slope, because I'm going to tell you something. I don't think Phillip Rivers is a Hall of Famer, but he will be. What did he win?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Phillip Rivers is a Hall of Famer?
I don't have numbers in front of me, but I bet he will be.
No, I'm saying, do you think he is a Hall of Famer?
I don't. I mean, he's borderline for me.
Okay.
So like there's a guy. That's not right in front of me to compare.
Right. So there's a guy.
I don't want to make like a.
Right.
Absolutely.
But there's
no,
a guy. There's a guy, quarterback, the biggest position in football. There's a guy that put up a lot of numbers, but threw a lot of interceptions, but threw a lot of touchdowns, threw for a lot of yards, and had some big regular seasons, and never even made it to the Super Bowl, let alone won it. And you're saying he's a borderline Hall of Famer. Some people say he's a Hall of Famer, and I would argue that he did nothing in postseason play.
Mm-hmm.
So Matthew Stafford, he tacked on tons of numbers at Detroit. Do you think Matthew Stafford's a Hall of Fame quarterback? I don't.
Yeah.
But if he goes to the Rams now and he wins a Super Bowl, and that's all he does, win one Super Bowl, and he, you know, keeps throwing for 4,000 yards every year, he will be a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, he is a, you know, above-average quarterback, but I don't think of him as a great quarterback. Do you?
I think he was handicapped a lot how the organization was run.
But that's not how you're supposed to be. If you start going down that
slope.
But
if you're asking me if he's a great quarterback, I think he's at times a great quarterback.
But there's my point. It kind of led me where I wanted to go. So if you make excuses to Matthew Stafford, well, you know, he didn't have a great organization. He put up good numbers. You make excuses to Phillip Rivers. Well, you know, Marty Schottenheimer was coached to 1 year, and the guy didn't take a knee in the playoff game against Patriots, which even if the Chargers win that game, that didn't put him in the Super Bowl, if you remember.
Yeah.
Okay? So he never came close to winning a Super Bowl, did Phillip Rivers. So if you're going to sit and go, well, he didn't have the right people around him, so forth and so on, and you're going to cut the break for that guy, then why don't you cut a break for Julian Edelman?
No, I'm not cutting.
When he had Randy Moss
on
his team 1 year, got all the glory. He has Tom Brady. He's got usually the Patriots are a balanced team. Edelman made huge plays at some of the biggest moments during the biggest games of anybody's career. He gets to those games. He makes those plays. And other guys can't even get to those games. But because they padded their numbers down 24-3 and scored two touchdown receptions late in the game,
saying,
like Phillip Rivers always did, and you get all these extra receiving yards.
Absolutely.
That's my point. Then if you sit there and make excuses, well, those guys didn't make it to playoffs and didn't do anything. I mean, they weren't on a good team. Edelman was. Now you're trying to punish Edelman for being on a great team. That's like punishing Scottie Pippen because he was paired with Michael Jordan. Pippen was a great player. Well, yeah, but, you know, if you'd done Jordan, he wouldn't have won a title. Well, Jordan never won one without Pippen. So we can go back and forth on this all day long. I think Julian Edelman is borderline. I think he is borderline, and he would be, to me, nowhere close if he didn't have the excellent postseason career that he had. The postseason career is what's going to probably, I believe, and I think there would be a bias towards the Patriots, the East Coast bias, and whoever votes. I do believe he'll get in. I don't know if I agree with it. I'm kind of on the fence on it, but I do understand the argument that in the biggest games, he stepped up and had great games, and he made plays and key plays to help win Super Bowls. And honestly, we always talk about it. What did we say when Johnny Cueto's trade happened in 2015 with the Royals? We don't care what Johnny Cueto does the regular season. We said it, right? We don't care what Johnny Cueto does the regular season. As long as he comes through in the playoffs, and if the Royals win the World Series, it's a great trade, even though we sent off three pitching prospects for Johnny Cueto, and we know we won't get him next year, and we know he's a rental player. If he wins in the postseason, that's all that matters. But then suddenly we come back with the argument, well, Edelman didn't do enough in the regular season. Really, all that really truly matters is what you do in the postseason. Isn't that the whole goal of every team is to win it all? Before the season in every sport, your goal is, hopefully, to win it all. And the Patriots did that a lot. And June Edelman, did he benefit by being with Bill Belichick? Yes. Did he benefit by Tom Brady? Yes. But he still performed at extremely high level. The numbers back that up in the postseason. So I think that's the ultimate argument. How much do you weigh the postseason versus regular season? Because if it's just regular season, Julian Edelman has no chance of being in the Hall of Fame. You combine the two, now I think he's borderline.
I get why people say he's borderline. I'm struggling to find, like, and I'd have to do a lot of research to find it. Like, how many athletes get into halls of fame and they never were an all-star in their sport?
Yeah, that is an interesting.
You know what I'm saying? Like, right. That's mm-hmm. the thing for me. This guy's 156th in all-time receiving yards. He's behind Ahmad Rashad.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing for me. As I understand, you got to weigh postseason. I feel like you got to weigh postseason about how you got there. I feel like he played in a ton more postseason games than most people did. And I understand that he had the numbers in those games, and I get that.
He shouldn't be punished for being on a great team or being part of a great team because he had extra postseason games.
Well, let me continue on to that point, though, because you were comparing guys like Jerry Rice had Joe Montana, right? So mm-hmm. Julian Edelman had Tom Brady. But Jerry Rice, Joe Montana, Emmitt Smith, Troy Aikman, whatever guys you're talking about, are all in the upper echelon.
Sure, no, I know that.
In their entire,
I know
everything
that.
That's part of that.
And that wasn't really my argument. My argument was that Jerry Rice had great players around him just like Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Julian Edelman's anywhere close
but
to
But when
Jerry
I'm
Rice.
Talking about a Hall of Fame, if I'm comparing, if Julian Edelman should be in there, he had all this and still is 156th in receiving all-time in the regular season behind Ahmad Rashad. Brandon Cooks has more receiving yards right now than Julian Edelman does.
But should the Hall of Fame be strictly numbers, though? Should it just be numbers?
No, it shouldn't. And I'm not saying you shouldn't.
That's what everybody seems to be arguing.
What the postseason is, but the Hall of Fame is a lot of numbers. Most of the people that get into the Hall of Fame, they base it on their numbers during their career. Right, right or wrong.
Well, that's my question.
That's what it is.
That's what my question
and,
is.
And should
we
I
value,
think that it
should
just
value
only
championships?
Be numbers? Oh, absolutely. I think you should value championships.
Okay. That's
but
the argument
for me.
Adam.
I mean, it has to, championships and everything there has to wash. That you're the fact that you're the 156th all-time receiver in the NFL in yards. Okay, it has to wash because nobody that's down. I mean, Marshall Faulk is low, but he was not a receiver. He was a running back, and he's like only six or seven spots below Edelman on receiving yards.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is most of the guys that are that low in the totem pole, if they're in the Hall of Fame, were doing something else, right?
Right.
They weren't just a wide receiver. So I it's tough for me because the one thing I always come back to, though, when this is all going through my brain is he was never recognized at the top of his game.
Never a Pro Bowler. Never a Pro Bowler.
In the season. Like, he was – none of those things are part of
right.
what he was
right.
as a player.
Mm-hmm.
And, listen, you got to be excited for the guy that he stepped up in the postseason and showed up to play. But it is not the hall of the playoffs. It's mm-hmm. not the hall of postseason. It's the Hall of Fame for everything you did in your career, and I just don't think he's got everything that adds up to back up putting him in there.
I don't know what's
going
to
personal.
I don't know what's going to
and
happen.
And I mean, like you said earlier, like you're not going to change a lot of people's minds about
right.
it, right?
Right.
And I don't. There's not going to be a whole lot to change my mind on that.
The Royals. I don't know who they're all going to put in their Hall of Fame. I don't. But I do think there'll be a guy from the team that won a World Series that's going to be out there that shouldn't be. Because we're going to be the all-fuzzy feeling thing. It might be Mike Moustakas down the line. And I don't think he should be in the Royals Hall of Fame. He didn't have a long enough career with the Royals to be a Hall of Famer. I don't think Eric Hosmer either.
Mm-hmm.
I think Salvi should. He will be.
Yeah.
But is Lorenzo Cain going to be? Is Alcides Escobar going to be? Because I'd argue both of those shouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I would argue about longevity as a Royal. And what you have right now is Dick Houser, Frank Wright, and George Brett. I'll put Salvi up there. But I don't think any other
Well,
Royals
those are like numbers retired, yeah.
Well, I know, but what I'm talking is they're the Hall of Fame. The Royals, I mean, they got a long list of Hall of Fame. Okay, whatever. Talk about numbers that get retired. There are going to be guys in the Royals Hall of Fame that should be in the Royals Hall of Fame.
Absolutely,
either.
Yeah.
I mean, probably the whole 15.
I mean, even those guys you're talking about, they're borderline
to me, Alcides Escobar shouldn't be in the Royals Hall of Fame.
No.
I really don't believe that. I mean, he had a good run. He won the ALCS MVP. So forth and so on, but you know why he will be?
Because he was part of that.
Because they won a championship, and that's the argument toward Julian Edelman in regards to the big-time Hall of Fame. And I get the argument. In regards to comparing Jordy Nelson and Julian Edelman, since you brought that up, Jordy Nelson had 8,500 yards receiving, and Julian Edelman, 6,800. Jordy Nelson, 613 receptions. Julian Edelman, 620. Jordy Nelson, yards per catch, 14. Edelman, 11 yards per reception. Now, in fairness, they played different wide receiver positions most of the time. I mean, Jordy wasn't a slot receiver his whole career. Edelman pretty much was. And your slot receivers aren't going to get as good a yards per catch. And I will say this, Jordy was faster, too.
Absolutely.
No doubt. Yeah. Touchdowns is really jumps out. 36 for Edelman during the regular season, 72 for Jordy. Yeah. So twice as many touchdowns. And if you argue, well, Jordy had Rodgers. Well, Edelman had Brady. Hello. Who's the greatest quarterback of all time. Let's see else. What else we got? 1,000-yard seasons. Edelman's had three 1,000-yard seasons. Jordy Nelson had four. Edelman, how many Super Bowls was he a part of with New England? Was it just the three? I think it might be three. Jordy, of course, the one.
I'm not 100%.
So, you know, Jordy, so if you want to sit here about receiver, well, yeah, that's great. Jordy's got all these numbers. Yeah, he's got a Super Bowl ring, too. So, yeah, I think if you're going to sit here and go Julian Edelman, and by the way, Jordy had a pretty good Super Bowl game as well. I mean, he had a couple drops, but he had the stats, if you want to argue stats.
Apparently, if he caught one more ball, he probably would have been the MVP, but that's
right.
What they tried
maybe
to tell
so.
Me. But
maybe. I think Rodgers would have got it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But whatever. So if you want to argue, a lot of people say, nobody's really saying Jordy Nelson should be in the National Football League Hall of Fame. I haven't heard a lot
Not
of
Not a lot of people that argue it.
No.
I felt like he had some numbers that puts him on a borderline at least to be talked about.
Yeah. So if Julian Edelman's borderline, why isn't Jordy Nelson borderline? If you look at the regular season stats, it's not even close. That would be a good fair comparison to throw out. But Jordy Nelson.
So he has like almost 1,700 more yards and seven less receptions, right?
Yeah, right, right. Twice as many touchdown receptions.
But again, like you said, I understand they do play different positions, but Jordy's faster, but Jordy didn't test faster, I'll bet.
Right.
Everybody was saying his 40 time was too slow when he was in the combine and things like that, but he's obviously faster and played a different position. They both had undoubted Hall of Famers playing at quarterback for him.
Julian Edelman played in the playoffs 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. Jordy Nelson in the playoffs, he was in there 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. Jordy Nelson had 54 catches in postseason play. Edelman twice as many, 118. Jordy Nelson, 668 yards receiving. Edelman, 1,442, twice as many. Yards per catch, almost identical. Touchdowns in postseason. Let's see, where is it at? Oh, 5 for Jordy and Edelman in postseason. Believe it or not, that's interesting. He only's had 5 too. But the stats in regards to Edelman. Let's see, Edelman 19 games in the postseason. Jordy had 13. I mean, Jordy's got. He's got enough numbers in the postseason to, you know, say, hey.
When things average out, he played enough games.
Saying. Like, it wasn't just that he was in there 1 year.
Yeah.
I mean, you are comparing apples to apples somewhat. I mean, Julian had 3 more appearances, but even with 3 more appearances, he still had double. He didn't have double the playoff appearances as double the playoff games as Jordy, and he has double the numbers. So you can't argue that Julian Edelman was a better playoff wide receiver than Jordy Nelson based on the stats.
Yeah.
Okay. But Jordy clearly had the better regular season career than Julian. So then once again goes back to my question. What do you value more? Because Edelman clearly, if you're arguing Jordy Nelson versus Julian Edelman, Edelman wins the postseason argument hands down, and Jordy wins the regular season argument hands down. But Jordy's not being mentioned as a borderline Hall of Famer. Julian Edelman is. But if Jordy and the Packers won 3 championships during those 6 playoff appearances in Green Bay instead of 1, Jordy probably be considered a borderline Hall of Famer, perhaps.
Yeah, and Jordy was at least a 2-time Pro Bowler.
Yes,
you know,
correct.
I don't know how many times he made it to the Pro Bowl, but
yeah, how important is being a Pro Bowl?
Yeah, I think when you're talking about Hall of Fame, all these things stack on.
Sure,
so they're
absolutely.
Part of it.
Oh yeah, no question.
And they'll expand your chances
right.
to make it. So
now you got to sort it out. So you choose whether you think at home listening right wherever you are whether Julian Edelman's a Hall of Famer or not. I've never really thought of him as a Hall of Famer. I look at the postseason numbers. I go, I'll at least listen to the argument. I still think I probably wouldn't, but I mean, it's closer than maybe I thought once I look at the numbers, if that's all you care about. Steph Curry is all about winning and
he's
numbers.
He's a Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Famer. Steph Curry, 53 last night. He's the all-time leading scorer for the Warriors, and, dude, he's the most fun guy to watch when he's on.
So Curry driving, Curry flipping it up and in, into the basket, and now into the record books. The most points ever in Warrior franchise history as Steph Curry surpasses Wilt Chamberlain.
What a milestone. There's going to be many more milestones to come. He's still going.
Steph passing Wilt Chamberlain as the all-time scoring leader with the Warriors over 17,783 points. Had 21 in the first quarter last night against the Nuggets. Warriors beat the Nuggets 116-107. Curry with 53. And the third 50-point game of the season, he joins Chamberlain, Michael Jordan, James Harden, Elgin Baylor, Kobe Bryant, and Rick Barry as the only players in NBA history to have scored 50 or more three times in a season in multiple seasons. That's pretty elite company right there.
Yeah.
Chamberlain, Jordan, Harden, Baylor, Bryant, and Barry. That's it. Want Curry. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Only 7 guys have ever done that in NBA history. He's a joy to watch. Absolute pleasure to watch. When the guy is on, there is nobody better. He is the best shooter in NBA history. You can argue. I don't even think there's a big argument there anymore. You know, Ray Allen was a great shooter, but Ray was a spot up, wide open guy. I mean, he was a guy that could quick release, shoot the three, but he wasn't a guy that could do, you know, shoot the 30 footers off the dribble, off his back foot, things like Curry does. It's just amazing. I saw a highlight of him warming up recently. He took 5 straight shots around 40 feet straight away on the logo and swished every one in pregame, and it didn't even look like he was making an effort to shoot it.
Yeah.
It's just a natural, and he works on his craft big time. Absolutely. NBA standings, Philadelphia 76ers half game lead over the Nets for the number 1 seed. The Bucks are the 3 seed. The Hawks have really come on. They're the 4 seed. The Heat, the 5. The Hornets, the 6. Celtics playing better recently. They've won 3 in a row. They're the 7. The Knicks are the 8 seed. The Pacers, the 9. The Bulls, the 10. Remember, there is the play-in situation, possibly 7, 8, 9, 10 seeds for the playoffs like they did last year in the bubble. In the West, the Jazz have 1.5 game lead over the Suns. Clippers are the 3 seed. The Nuggets are the 4. The Lakers are a 5, but Anthony Davis and LeBron James are getting closer to coming back. The Lakers the other night whipped the Nets, and the Nets had Kyrie Irving ejected and Durant, you know, just back, and Harden's out with a hammy, and the Lakers rolled the Nets. And the Lakers didn't have AD, didn't have LeBron. They got Ben McLemore, former Jayhawk, who's played well since they picked him up. And the Lakers are a 5 seed. The Blazers are the 6. Mavericks have played better since the break. They're at 7 seed. The Grizzlies, the 8. Spurs are 9, Dusty Spurs. And the Warriors are 10. And the Pelicans are only a game out of getting into that 10th slot with Zion Williamson. So that's a look at the NBA standings. Yesterday, Dusty and I, we had this conversation. We weren't planning on really going there. I don't even remember how we got there. But it was a very interesting conversation. At least I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And so if you listened yesterday, we're going to extend upon that discussion. If you didn't hear the show yesterday, then we'll get you caught up to speed a little bit. But we really were talking about how Major League Baseball has some issues going forward with its popularity and some of the mistakes that Major League Baseball has made. And we talked about how kids nowadays have many different options. The younger generations have tons of options. They have their phone. They can get their highlights of games right away without having to watch the games. Major League Baseball's games are late at night, like the playoffs, the World Series, even the All-Star game doesn't get over in time for kids, you know, they got school the next day, whatever the case may be. We've talked about that. We talked about baseball games can last way too long. The game has to be sped up. Major League Baseball has been reactive over the course of time instead of proactive. The average age of a baseball viewer now, as of 5 years ago, was 57, which is up from the average age of 52, which means that the Major League Baseball is trending with an older viewer and an older fan of the game, whereas soccer is getting the younger folks. As Dusty and I were talking about yesterday off the air, if you go to the big city and go buy baseball diamond soccer fields, on Saturdays or on the weekends, there are more kids playing soccer than baseball. First of all, soccer doesn't cost as much to play. You just got to go out and play. Put a jersey on or put a shirt on and short, and somebody has a soccer ball. You can, you know, play soccer. I mean, you can, for the most part, you can work on your game. It's kind of soccer, you can play kind of by yourself. Baseball, it's hard to play by yourself. I mean, you'd have to pay for a pitching machine to work on or have somebody throw the ball to you, so you need at least one other person. I mean, it's a little bit different there. soccer, the games are 2 hours, and actually they're 90 minutes, but basically with intermission and everything, you know within 2 hours you're done at a soccer game and you can go home. Baseball could last anywhere from 2.5 to 4.5 hours just for a 9-inning game. Baseball has a lot of dead time. Soccer is constantly moving. There's more offense and scoring in baseball than there is in soccer. But here's the point. Major League Baseball is losing the younger fan. I use my kid as an example. He says he plays baseball. He likes it. He doesn't love it. The reason he likes the other sports better are ones that have more movement. There's more constant action, like basketball, whereas baseball is a slow game, and as most people would argue, it's probably the most boring team sport that's out there. Not to say baseball is a bad sport. There's more strategy. It's a mental. I think baseball is maybe the toughest sport to mentally play, along with golf, because you're battling your inner demons by yourself in golf. And so there are different intricacies with baseball, obviously, compared to soccer. So what we were discussing yesterday was, is there an opening for soccer? Because we've talked about soccer is the most popular sport worldwide. But in the United States of America, number one is the National Football League. Number two, I haven't looked it up. It's between the NBA and Major League Baseball. Those are the top three.
NBA's second.
I think it is.
From what I looked at yesterday.
Okay, it used to not be.
Yeah.
So number one is NFL by far. Number two is college football, to be quite honest.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But we're talking pro sports. Yeah. So you got the NFL, and you've got the NBA, you got the Major League Baseball, and then fourth, what did we say was fourth? Did we say
MLS
soccer is fourth?
MLS is fourth. They passed the NHL.
Then there's NASCAR or NHL, then NASCAR after that.
And like I said, NASCAR wasn't part of that. And unless they consider NASCAR a team sport, NASCAR might be fourth.
Right, I think it is, actually.
But team professional
in regards
sports.
To ratings, I think it is. So we talk about how NASCAR has built up what it's doing and become more popular, getting some good TV deals. We talk about UFC is really ascending quickly, and I think part of that is because boxing has fallen off. And then there's soccer, and we were talking about how soccer could really speed up the process if they could get the casual fan or somebody like myself who doesn't want to watch ties, eliminate ties, have penalty kick shootouts all the time, and maybe have a situation where if you make a goal from a certain line, you get 2 points instead of just one every time, so that you could create more excitement when the team gets behind the rally. Kind of like what you do, you know, NBA and college women's basketball, you advance the ball to make it exciting at the end, okay? You don't earn it. You know, earn it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about like different rules, and we were talking about what if soccer changed their game where there's more offense, could still keep it, you know, the short 2 hour window. Would that alienate and upset rabid soccer fans? Maybe. But would they quit watching? We both agreed they wouldn't. And so forth and so on. And we said, well, what about soccer? What's their goal? You know, is soccer going to pass baseball? Because the demographics, basically from 1 to 29 years of age, soccer is more popular than baseball. Ian Desmond, who played for the Colorado Rockies, and he's now sat out because of COVID last year and opted out again this year, talked about how down in Florida they had baseball academies left and right. They have these baseball fields. He's actually trying to rebuild something because there are nobody playing baseball in these academies anymore down there. He talked about how the fields are just completely let go and so forth. And young kids aren't being allowed, and kids that are in poverty and in poor neighborhoods, they don't have the means to even play or have a field to play on. So he's working at trying to reinvigorate that, which I applaud him for. But you do, you look around. In the bigger cities, soccer is a bigger deal. It's not even close compared to baseball. Dusty was talking, you want to share this with people, about Newton, that there is no baseball unless you do traveling baseball.
Oh, yeah,
there's no organized baseball in Newton. That's a pretty good-sized town in our state.
We actually talked about that probably 3 or 4 years back when we were talking about how traveling sports were kind of evolving and things like that. But, yeah, I know my nephews living in Newton, so after third grade, if you want to keep playing baseball, you have to be on a club team.
There's no Parks and Rec. There's no junior high.
Parks
teams.
And Rec is rolling all the way T-ball and then coach pitch. And after coach pitch, after third grade,
you're on your own.
That's it. You got to find a club to play on until eighth grade or ninth grade, I guess, freshman year if you want to play on the high school baseball team. So, yeah, I mean, that's not helping grow your sport at all if you're cutting out. And listen, club teams aren't letting you on to their team for free. So you're going to have to pay a decent amount of money, and it's not a cheap amount of money either. I say they're not letting you on for free. They're not letting you on for a discount either.
No.
So it's not cheap, I know, because my nephews have done it. So yeah, you're just out of luck if you're past third grade and you don't want to spend money to play baseball, and a lot of money to play baseball.
And soccer is, like I said, a less expensive sport to play typically. So soccer has become more popular. So we looked up some information after the show yesterday, and we were talking about, well, is Major League Soccer happy with where they are and they're just going to take their time, or could they make some rash, not rash, but major changes to their game that I just mentioned to speed up the popularity of their game, to grab a fan like myself or maybe even you to watch soccer on a more regular basis. And I found an article, which is a year old from last year, 2020, said that Major League Soccer has a 25-year plan, but it needs to secure huge media deals first. You know, Dusty talked about the popularity of soccer, you know, gaining on Major League Baseball, and I think it is, but it's still not as popular all the way around with all age demographics and genders and ethnicities. It is not. It is not more popular in baseball right now. And the easy thing I can say to back that up is that if it was, soccer would have a gigantic TV contract like Major League Baseball, like the NBA, and like the National Football League. Maybe not as high as the NFL, but they would be one of the major players. Major League Soccer is not a major player when it comes to the media rights and media deals. However, that could eventually change because Major League Soccer, their current deal expires in 2022, which would be next year. And they are looking for media partners, and the MLS is growing. I don't know the exact numbers, but they are growing. They're expanding. The goal is to expand from 24 teams to 30 teams by next year, 2022. Their commissioner said that MLS is preparing for 7 new soccer stadiums, better technology infrastructure, and continued investment in youth academies. And that's where baseball's losing it, man. Soccer is smart doing that. Investing in youth academies in an effort to develop homegrown talent to enhance the quality of play on the field. So you're trying to develop your talent in the USA when the kids are young. In the past, worldwide, we're not very good worldwide as USA soccer. But 5-10 years from now, we might be. Because kids are actually going to play from the very beginning as soccer, or even specialize in soccer. And it didn't used to be that way. That's why we're usually better in baseball than a lot of teams, okay? And basketball, too, to be quite honest with you. And eventually, guess what? The Dream Team doesn't do what it used to do when Barkley and Bird and Magic and Jordan were on that team, remember, back in 92. So the world is catching up to the NBA, obviously, or catching up.
And they're doing it.
Got some great international players. They're playing NBA, like Luka Doncic's one that comes to mind right off the bat.
Yeah, they're doing it the exact opposite of the U.S., right?
Right.
They're trying to get better in other sports because they excel in soccer.
Yes.
Like, that's their sport. They're better than you.
Right.
Europeans are better than you at this sport, right? So they're trying to get better at basketball now.
Exactly.
Whatever sport that it might be.
So baseball used to invest a lot in youth academies. And in fact, Frank Wright was part of a Royals academy, and then that helped him become a Royals Hall of Famer, for crying out loud. You don't see that much anymore. I was talking about with Ian Desmond. These fields are just vacant, and kids aren't playing baseball, or they can't afford to play baseball, and nobody's reaching out to younger, impoverished neighborhoods where you go through a lot of these. Some of these players have come from very poor neighborhoods that are at major leaguers right now, or even guys that become Hall of Famers. But they got to have that opportunity somehow, some way. Somebody maybe provides it. They foot the bill for it. And so soccer is being smart because they have continued their investment in youth academies, and that's going to continue to grow. And if Major League Baseball continues to sleepwalk when it comes to this, and I know there's been a lot more talk, and Dayton Moore's talked about we need to do more of it, but Major League Baseball as a whole, honestly, has let it slide. And I think it's going to take a while to catch back up in that area. Mm-hmm. So I think eventually you're going to see more popularity with soccer down the line when these people that are 20 become 30 and 40. And you're going to see the Major League Baseball, as we're already seeing, the average viewer become older and older and older. And what happens when that generation dies out? You got to have a new generation that grows up with baseball.
Yeah.
Now, there's going to be kids no matter what. They're going to still grow up with baseball like baseball. But it might not be as many and so forth and so on. And so Major League Soccer is got a current rights package with ESPN and Fox. And the question is, will Major League Soccer have the leverage to attract lucrative media packages for 2022 and beyond? Their TV ratings still lag when compared to other top pro leagues. Thus, that's why I said maybe you come up with something to help your ratings by creating more offense in soccer. Have no ties. That's the reason I brought that up. The issue is, how do you increase the broadcast rights? The only way that is going to happen is if rights holders see an increase in audience. And it's here, audience growth, where Major League Soccer will need to improve, starting with better promotion and marketing of its players. But here's the thing. They need to be American players, I think. for the most part. They need to be homegrown American players, and you don't have a lot of those right now. Because you got a lot of guys that are coming from different countries that come over and play, and then they go back to their teams or whatever the case may be. MLS is banking on expansion. They, in addition to Miami and Nashville's new clubs last year, they have a new franchise in Austin, a Charlotte franchise. They have two more franchises, one in St. Louis, one in Sacramento in 2022. And they're going to cap it at 30 teams. The popularity is rising, especially younger people. And Garber, the commissioner, said media outlets will need the MLS as live sports content continues to be a demand for traditional linear media partners and new outlets that focus on streaming. So soccer feels very good in where they are, but it's going to be imperative for them to get a good media deal when the current one runs out in 2022. Now let's flip over to baseball. So soccer seems to be ascending, maybe slowly, in regards to the TV part of it. Major League Baseball has a gigantic deal, as you probably know, with ESPN. However, this story coming out just a few months ago in January, that ESPN, the deal between Major League Baseball and ESPN, a new agreement, is going to be a cheaper agreement. $550 million per year, down from $700 million per year. ESPN is also going to cut more than half of the games that they carried exclusively because they don't get lots of great ratings for afternoon day games during the week or even evening games during the week. Their best ratings are Sunday Night Baseball. ESPN is going to keep Sunday Night Baseball. That's okay. They're going to still have the Home Run Derby. But you may say, okay, there we go. Major League Baseball's lost all their money. There you go. ESPN's going south. They're not investing. Well, but to balance it out, Major League Baseball recently renewed their deals with Fox Sports and Turner Sports, and the Fox deal was up $525 million from the previous one, and the Turner deal was up by $325 million. So even though the ESPN deal is down $150 million, Major League Baseball actually comes out ahead by about $650 to $700 million. So they're still okay. And those TV deals with Fox and Turner are through 2028. Whereas soccer has nothing locked up past 2022, although that could be a good thing, so they can get a better deal. Fox and Turner have the rights to the All-Star Game, League Championship Series, and the World Series. There is a chance that the changes to the ESPN deal could work well for baseball. There wouldn't be as much national exposure with fewer games on ESPN, but you'd have more of a focus on your regional partners. MLB TV out-of-market packages could benefit from the changes. That would help drive up revenues for individual clubs like the Royals and others. There's also some potential for deals with new partners like social media platforms and online networks. Having said that, the Royals can't even be seen on Hulu, Sling, YouTube, not even on Dish TV right now. Mm-hmm. How's that good for baseball? How's that good for Kansas City Royals baseball organization? Another problem for Major League Baseball to deal with. And so if you want to start looking down the line, if you want to start making predictions, you can make a decent argument, based on some of the information that I just shared with you, that soccer is gaining on baseball and that soccer will catch baseball based on the way things are trending. Because as an advertiser, I'm just going to say this. If I am a corporate advertiser, I'm still investing in Major League Baseball. Possibly, you know, I am. I got still a good audience, even though the viewership is down overall, as is with every sport from back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s for the most part, because there's more options. You got all kinds of different things to choose from. You got your phones, you got games, kids got all kinds of different things. But it's a younger generation you got to reach out to. And I think that's where Major League Baseball is missing the boat. I really do. Mm-hmm. Like NBA reaches out to the younger generation. They're marketing all those shoes, right? They want the kids to buy the $200 shoes. They got the Irving shoes, the Durant shoes, the Harden shoes. I mean, you got all kinds of, and it's all about the individual, which is somewhat scary because it should be about team, but it's about individual. They market those individuals. The NBA does a good job with that. The NFL does a wonderful job with that. You know, they've got a lot of flag football now. They've got play NFL, whatever it's called, play 60.
Yeah.
They've got, the NFL is very smart and they've grown their sport. And so they're doing the right thing. But when you think about Major League Baseball, are they really reaching out to get the young person? And if they miss out on one generation, not two, but if they just miss out on one generation, if they miss out on the 15 to 25 year olds right now, that's a whole decade of people they lose because they're all with soccer and grew up with soccer and didn't have baseball. And then those families may turn around when those kids get older, and they're going to get their kids involved in soccer because that's what they know instead of baseball. Yeah. You see the trickle-down effect. So baseball is trending the wrong way. And if I'm a corporate sponsor down the line, maybe not right now, I'm looking at if soccer gives me a presentation and shows me their demographic, And I've got a product that I want to make sure that young people get a hold of and that they're going to like so that they're going to keep it until they're 40, 50, 60 years old. It's kind of like what you're doing right now with soccer, getting them going early when they're little and maybe there's not baseball options for you in the big cities or it costs too much to play. I get started in soccer. I'm going to grow up with soccer possibly. If I'm a corporate sponsor, if I come up with some food product, all right, or an energy drink, let's say, and I don't, 55-year-olds don't want my energy drink. That's not who I'm going to target. Now, there's still 35, 40-year-olds that might want energy drinks because they lack their testosterone or whatever, and they're watching baseball. So I'm going to target those people. That's fine. But what I really want to target eventually with energy drink, who do I want to target? I want to target teenagers. I want to target kids that are, people that are in their 20 to 30, and where could I better spend my money might very well be spending less money because it's not as big a deal in regards to the major network deals that soccer has, and I might be better off spending my money to target the younger people with soccer, even on the current TV deal, than spending my money on baseball. Now, so far, there's enough sponsorships for baseball. But what's recently happened with baseball? They made a knee-jerk reaction to take the All-Star game out of Atlanta. You know why? Everybody's talking about, well, it's because of the voting law in Georgia. No, that's a roundabout effect. You know what is the real reason why Major League Baseball took the game out of Atlanta? Because corporate sponsors were ready to pull out. And that means Major League Baseball knows they need corporate sponsors. You need sponsors. You need advertisers. And you need ratings to keep getting those rates and get those TV deals. Now, Major League Baseball, I think, is pretty set through 2028. But that's going to be an interesting question, isn't it? What happens at the end of that deal? In 2028, which is 7 years from now, soccer could very well shoot up if they get a good TV deal next year. And you get the younger people. Now, we're talking in 2028, these people that might be 18 or 25 are now into their 30s. Where does it go? If I'm Major League Baseball, you've got to recognize you have a problem because your ratings are going down, your game's too slow, and I love baseball, but it's true. It's too slow, and you are losing, your viewers getting older, and that's not what you want to send out to your corporate sponsors. Do you still want to appeal to the 57-year-old man or woman? Sure you do, but certain things you don't. I don't need to push my energy drink at a 57-year-old man or woman. I'm just using that as an example.
Yeah.
All right? Now, can I focus on, if I'm beer sales, everybody can drink beer, right, legally. So I can focus on the 21-year-old. I can focus on stuff that's 18 to where I hope they drink when they're 21 or whatever. Or 18, 19, 20. Well, what is it? Legal age to drink is
21.
21, right? Yeah. Okay, it still is. I thought so. Yeah. So anyway,
we're so far past it, we don't focus on it anymore, right?
Right. So you get people to buy your alcohol, or you at least market it at college games and whatever else, and you get people to buy onto your product, whether it's energy drink, whether it's an energy bar, whatever product it might be. Maybe it's alcohol, maybe it's a certain soft drink. Okay, you're going to target the younger people. Makes sense to target because then if they grow up with it, they're going to keep. Because we go get stuck in our routines, don't we? We eat some of the same stuff most of the time. We drink the same thing all the time. And eventually, we just keep doing it and doing it until it's not there anymore for us to have. And it becomes kind of an iconic thing. And then you get caught on the commercials and the slogans. And you know right away what a Dr. Pepper can looks like, even though you don't even can read it from a mile away. But you can tell what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Things like that. Twizzlers, we talked about yesterday, National Licorice Day. You know what a Twizzler is, okay? That's brand name recognition, so forth and so on. But if you're a new product and you're trying to catch on to become one of those products, wouldn't it behoove you to reach out to the younger audience and establish that early so that they grow up with it generation to generation? Because let's be honest, as we get older, I'm raising my hand right now, we get a little bit more stuck in our ways. We don't try things as much as we once did probably, right? Because we're comfortable in where we are. I know a friend of mine goes into a beer establishment, 100 beers on tap, and still orders Coors Light. I'm like, dude, try some different beers. You can get free samples. I know what I like. But you don't know what you are missing. Well, I know I like this. Okay, well, that's an example. Your younger people are more willing to try that stuff. Your older people usually are not.
Yeah.
And so if you've got new products as a sponsor, a corporate sponsor, an advertiser, you probably should be looking into soccer more than baseball.
Absolutely. You know,
right now.
You're talking about, so yesterday we had mentioned the age of the average viewer for Major League Baseball, 57, whatever.
And that was five years ago.
And so I kind of, as you're talking about, you know, advertising and things like that, and everything is based on demographics.
Right.
How you want to advertise. as a corporate sponsor, right? Remember a few years back when we were complaining that there was a certain adult medicine that kept popping up at like 7 o'clock during the playoff games?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right.
They know who their target audience
yes,
is.
They
it's
did.
50 to 60 year old men,
yeah,
right?
You're talking about Viagra.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Cialis.
Or Cialis is the one. Well, Viagra and Cialis, yeah.
The most.
That same type of drug.
Yeah. And so everybody, and there was a lot of people that are like, really? This, what do you have this commercial on during the early afternoon baseball game? Well, they know who they're targeting.
You bet.
And so they know the demographics. And that's exactly the opposite of what you're talking about, right? You want the you're trying to have kids that you're targeting. So you're not targeting kids when you're playing those ads
mm-hmm.
and playing those commercials during your baseball games. They're going to have to figure things out. They have a lot of work to do before 2028, because when you're reading that story to me yesterday and they're saying, like, oh, with the regional networks, it could help Major League Baseball to allocate funds different ways. And that does not help your game
no.
as a whole to have less corporate or less national televised games.
Right.
And you're worried about regional. And like you said, you know, the corporate sponsors in Kansas City, excuse me, they're going to be focused on the same things that you're talking about, right? But you also have to be on TV. You have to be in homes. You have to have a package that you trust and understand that people are actually going to watch. And right now, that's not happening for the Royals and about probably 18 different teams in the league that are on the new network that are not on Hulu. They're not on anything else other than if you get cable.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, I'm not trying to advocate for not having cable or anything like that. What I'm saying is, they've got to figure that out as Major League Baseball, not the cable companies, not Hulu, not this. They've got to figure out a way to make sure their product is on or they're going to be in big trouble.
No, I agree with you. The sport that has the highest average age of a viewer is baseball.
Major League Baseball. Yeah.
It is. It is baseball. And I'm pulling this up here, trying to see. And Major League Baseball is the highest. And this is as of a few years ago, okay? I pulled up this article. And there will be no youth movement for Major League Baseball. The average age of a baseball viewer is 57, up from 52. And that was 2016 when that new number came out. There won't be a youth movement either. It's just 7%. Listen to this. This is 2018, all right? I know that was 3 years ago. I think that's when the article, yeah, 2018. 3 years ago, this article came out. 7% of baseball's audience is below age 18. 7%. 7%. Let's see, what else we got? The only sports with an average age higher than baseball's, NASCAR 58, men's tennis 61, horse racing 63, figure skating 63, and any form of golf, which that makes sense. A lot of guys retire golf, catch on to the game. That's not an all bad thing. Golf can focus on that. There's young people watch that too. They're also the only sports drawing fewer younger people, with the under 18 crowd ranging from 6% for women's tennis and figure skating to a dismal 3% for golf, which is interesting. So they're saying golf's not getting younger viewers. But they say the NFL, actually, only 9% of the NFL's audience is kids under 18 because of attention spans, blame devices, yeah, as we've talked about, and so forth and so on. But here we go. The average age, this is what I wanted to find out. So we just talked about, the average age, and this is 2016, 5 years ago, the average age of TV viewers, the average age for sports, PGA Tour golf, 64. All right?
Mm-hmm.
That makes some sense, like I said. But let's talk about team sports, all right? If you're talking about professional team sports, and if you don't count NASCAR, which NASCAR would win this competition if you count NASCAR as a team sport, 58. But if you take NASCAR out of the equation, Major League Baseball is 57. College football is 52. College basketball is 52. National Football League is 50. The NHL is 49. Boxing is 49. The NBA is 42. And MLS is 40. Bingo. MLS, NBA, the average viewer is 15 to 17 years younger than Major League Baseball. The NFL is kind of okay. They're kind of in the middle of both worlds. They're at 50. So they're still okay. They still got to reach out to the younger audience. Major League Baseball has a major problem. When you look at those numbers, Major League Soccer has the lowest average age. And here's the thing. Those numbers will go up for soccer, and they should. Because when people are younger and they're getting involved, as they age, that'll go up. Or it might stay about the same if you can keep that momentum going generation after generation after generation. But think about that for a second. The NBA average age of viewer is 42. I didn't realize it was that young. 42. Major League Soccer is 40. And baseball is a decade and a half older for the average fan. That is a major problem. And if I would be presenting a presentation, if I was a advertising agency, and I'm trying to get new clients and new products, and we know there's a lot of new technology. You know, how many times do you hear your mom or dad or grandma or grandpa talk about how they can't figure out how to run? It used to be run a VCR. Now it's how to run the DVR, how to turn the TV on, how to run a computer, how to hook up a laptop, how to connect to Wi-Fi, how to run their phone, how to turn their phone on, how to load an app, how to download an app, how to text. Guess what's happening with MLS and NBA? They're getting the young people that already know how to do all that stuff. So the new technology and new companies come out and new gadgets come out. Who do you want to focus on?
The younger viewers.
Younger viewers, exactly. And get all the younger and new technology stuff older people don't want to gravitate towards because they're comfortable and they know what they know. And a little stubborn to adjusting to that. I know that.
Yeah.
I'm that way myself.
Yeah.
So it's actually, if you have a new product, a new company, or something that you want to grow and stay for a while, you are probably better off targeting the National Basketball Association with your advertising and Major League Soccer instead of Major League Baseball or even NASCAR. Now, NASCAR, I think, is a niche. I think there's certain products you wouldn't put on different sports. It would be NASCAR. And I think there's definitely some stuff that would fit on NBA that wouldn't fit with soccer, you know, depending on what the product is. But when you talk about reaching out to the younger people and the younger generations, the generation after you and me and the generation after that, the NBA and MLS, they are on the right path. And Major League Baseball has got to get back and figure it out. And the problem is, it's going to take time to get back where they need to get. And they haven't fully dealt with the detriment of the decisions they've made or the lack of reaching out to the younger people over the last few years. But they will feel it eventually.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to be hard to turn it around.
Yeah. Your soccer and NBA, I mean, that's the perfect age for an average viewer, right? You're averaging out where they're at.
Absolutely.
So that means under 40 and over 40 from 0 to 80.
Yes.
You're getting a lot of viewers, and they don't go to zero, but you know what I'm saying. You want to be in that 40 range for an average age of your viewer.
Absolutely.
Because that means you're coming on both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah,
you're
40
getting
to 45
people young, you're getting people older, you're getting what you need.
Yeah.
And so I would say that's probably actually about 20 to 60 range in the NBA is probably about the same viewership.
I agree.
That's where you get to 40, right?
Right.
That's where you get the average age. Now, obviously, if you're up to 57 during this study for baseball, younger kids are not paying attention to your sport.
No.
And that's where we're at right now. And NBA's 42. So, I got a lot of nephews. I've always gravitated toward the younger crowd, right? Mm-hmm. And I know what they're in tune to, and I know what they're watching. And I can tell you, kids are around the age of my cousins are watching way more soccer than baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, NFL, I think fantasy helps with some of that with the younger generation where they want to be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
NFL markets better as a whole, obviously, and it's the biggest game in the country. There's no question about it. But when you talk about NBA, I mean, the NBA with their marketing is why that number is at 42.
You're right. They've had a great marketing.
Because the kids are on Twitter. They see all that. Mm-hmm. They see the arguments. We're making who's the GOAT, you know. We're not talking – arguments don't go as long about who's the GOAT in football or baseball or anything like that. And
right.
That's all about what you're seeing in real time as kids and what you want to believe and what you want to think. And I mean, that's where the NBA has been David Stern was way ahead of the game.
He was a trailblazer.
I talked about Ahmad Rashad earlier.
Yeah. Right.
Who has more receiving yards than Julian. Inside stuff, right?
Right?
When we were kids. I mean, that was already on. And we were seeing it on.
And
it was on a network channel back then.
Yes, it was.
When cable wasn't ubiquitous, right?
Yeah. I mean, he saved the NBA. The NBA was floundering.
Yeah, exactly. And so they did the correct things to market to get their superstars to the forefront.
Yes, sir.
You knew who Michael Jordan was at a very young age because they did everything they could. They're force feeding it all to you. Mm-hmm. And baseball is a sport that's never really done it like that. You know, they had the home run chase and stuff that kind of brought guys to the forefront, but they've never marketed it like that.
You think about it. How you, like when I say MJ, you immediately think Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
If I say LeBron, you know, without saying his last name, what it is, or just LB, I could say people in LJ and
magic
people know that.
Magic is a pretty big word, right?
Bird. If I hear the word magic, I think of
Magic Johnson.
Even Dr. J. I mean, we're talking older players now, but you know, like guys are known by their initials
name.
Dame Time.
Oh, you're talking about the get Russ. I mean, people know. You said KD, you know who these people
KD,
are.
KD, you know right Kyrie. Away, right? Kyrie, you know right away. What NFL players have that? Not Mahomes doesn't even have a nickname.
So you have to have a last name, right, to understand for sure who
you're
talking
about. But they're not marketed
about.
That way is my point. There's no, like, if I say Pat,
Megatron.
That could be anybody. I mean, Megatron. But the NFL doesn't really have that.
This is the only thing that I can really think of.
MLS, think about the great players. Pelé, Ronaldo. I mean, you got...
Neymar.
Maradona, right? Diego Maradona, Argentina.
Yeah.
Well, he went by his one name.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. Whereas you go with Major League Baseball, I can't even think of a guy. I mean, I think of Mr. October. That's old.
Yeah.
With Reggie Jackson. What guy is just a one-word thing in Major League Baseball? I can't think of one there either. There probably are. Maybe there's a few. The point is, it doesn't come to mind right away. But where it really does is NBA.
They'll be there for like your individual teams, right?
Right.
If I say ace,
but nationally they're not known that way.
Ventura and you know Salvi, you know you're talking about Perez. And,
right.
And
but that's not a national.
That's
thing.
Not a thing in baseball. It's not marketed.
But
that
the
way.
NBA is.
Yeah.
And that's probably very smart.
Yeah.
It's very interesting when you delve into the numbers and look at these stories. It's. Yeah,
nobody,
soccer's on the right track.
You can just keep going on all day. We could talk for hours about that.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, nobody wants to wear nobody's got the Hawses that they're wearing on the diamond, right? Like, they don't have the I got to get the new pair of Hawses, right? Everybody's got the KD. I got to get the new KDs.
Absolutely.
I mean, that started
where did it really start? It started with Converse, with Magic Johnson and Bird. But where it really took off was... Michael Jordan. And that's what really turned the NBA. When he became a worldwide thing.
Kobe's, man.
NBA never looked back because they actually got the whole world. Major League Baseball is not a worldwide phenomenon.
No.
The NBA is with names, not teams, names. I mean, you know what caused and started all that? Well, Stern got it going. But the biggest thing was the marketing efforts of Nike with Michael Jordan and David Falk. That's where it took off to another stratosphere.
Yeah.
And it's never really, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And that's a good thing for the National Basketball Association. And they know who to target. I just think Major League Baseball has made some major mistakes when it comes to marketing and promotion. We'll see eventually if it comes back to bite them. I think they're feeling it a little bit already.
Mm-hmm.
But what will happen when their TV deal runs out in 2028? I know that's a ways off. But soccer, after 2022, they could have a new deal. And that deal is much improved over what they got now. Soccer's on its way, folks.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.